wherever you feel fear, that's where
you've got to become the person that will attract over 200 different cognitive biases.
The real work in any business is thinking.
All right. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the FLW podcast. My name is Cody DeGraff, and I'm here with my co-host, Gabriel Klingman.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Just a quick reminder, if you can hit that subscribe button, it would mean the world to us. Today, we have Mark Drager on here. It's going to be amazing, guys.
Yeah, we're super pumped to have him. And for those of you who don't know Mark, he is a brilliant entrepreneur and marketing strategist who has built a multi-million dollar marketing agency. He's also helped others major national brands around the world. In addition to all this, this guy has a phenomenal podcast. We'll leave the links in the description that you guys follow him. He's always giving golden nuggets on how to better yourself and having greater success within your business or just whatever respective career that you are in. And Mark, thanks so much for coming out, man. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing amazing.
You look like you're doing amazing. How's everything been treating you? You're out in Canada, I believe, yes?
Yes, we are up here in the Great White North, as we like to be called. I'm feeling good. I mean, you know, we're in a totally different type of lockdown than all of you. Life is actually not that bad right now.
Yeah, no, that's great, man. Well, dude, what we like to do is start off with like a little fun. We call it the five rapid, where we ask you five questions and feel free to answer it. You know, which one would you rather? So are you ready?
Mm-hmm. Let's go.
All right. So the first one is Superman or Batman?
Batman.
Yeah, my brother. I feel that. Broadway theater or going to the movies?
Oh, is the Broadway a musical?
Yes.
Musical, Broadway theater.
I feel that. Okay.
Would you rather be dealing with your children as at the stage of being infants, or would you rather deal with children as toddlers?
Toddlers. I have four kids.
I know. Through it a lot. This about
toddlers,
you, yes.
Please.
House on the beach or house in the mountains?
Beach.
Ooh.
Now, would you rather spend a day with Benjamin Franklin or a day with Leonardo da Vinci?
Oh,
yeah, that's a tough one.
I don't care about either so equally. I would say Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, brilliant.
Oh, I can't hang out with Italians. That's just a joke.
I love
I'm
it.
German. I grew up in a construction family. Everyone like in construction is either German or Italian or Polish, 100%. I guess. But I like Italians. It's fine.
That's brilliant. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
What else do you do?
What else do I do? I mean, I do lots of stuff. But yeah, I grew up in a house building construction family. My grandfather moved here in 1950 and started a company a very long time ago. And so. We do pretty much anything that we need to do.
Right in with that, how did you get to where you are? What's your story?
Oh man, how did I get? So, well, I mean, I went to film school of all things.
Wow.
Back in high school, I really wanted to be an architect. Like I really wanted to be an architect. Again, I grew up in this construction family and I thought, I love space. I love light. I love eye lines. I love all those things. And so I thought, okay, civil engineer, you know, let's do that. In high school, you have all these lofty dreams, civil engineer and architect, I'm going to do that. And then I realized it's like 12 years of like schooling and apprenticing and stress and all this stuff. I entered a film festival in like grade 12, like right before I was submitting for colleges and universities. And it just seemed like more fun. Like really what it was I got scared and thought, oh, you know, like calculus and chemistry and all this. Anyway, film seemed more fun. So I went to film school, but I've always had this kind of engineering mind. And so in film school, after I graduated from that, I worked in television and I worked in a franchise system. And so I was lucky enough to land doing video production and doing film at an internet marketing company in 2005.
Yeah.
And so I spent 2 years helping this internet marketing franchise communicate and advertise and sell. And I did really bad work, but I learned a lot of really great lessons. And so I was immersed with all the early days of, you know, of internet marketing and landing pages and what could we do and what can't we do and all of this stuff. And so I started my own firm in 2006. When, you know, I focused on video because that was my profession. You know, most of us go to school to become something. And I knew I wanted to run my own business and I happened to do video. So I'm going to run a video business. I mean, that just naturally makes sense. But because I spent 2 years in internet marketing, when I moved over to start my own firm, like we just brought all of the thinking and all of the infrastructure and all of the processes from internet marketing to video, which today sounds foreign because it's all one and the same. But if you go back to 2006, I mean, YouTube wasn't purchased by Google. We weren't able to stream broadband video at the time. It was still dial-up in a lot of regions. Yeah. Facebook, like, I just got a Facebook profile.
No way.
Like, when I started my company. Like, I just, I remember the week before I started the company, one of my coworkers said, hey, you should check out this Facebook thing. And I was like, okay, cool. Twitter didn't exist. I mean, like this was, I don't know, you guys look pretty young, but this was a long time ago, it seems. Mm. And so started the video company, you know, went, did bad video. A few years after the recession, was able to do better video that became, you know, marketing, and then marketing became advertising, and then advertising became running more of a full service agency. And because I spent, you know, 05 and 06 in that early days of internet marketing, it all just came very naturally to me.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. And you've done so well too in your success. And, you know, I guess that kind of leads me to a question, you know, with a lot of people that are trying to jump into their own success stories, like, what do you think holds them back from their potential?
Well, I mean, listen, I appreciate that you think I'm successful, and I am better off than I was 10 years ago, let's say, but I'm still nowhere near my potential. Mm. And you will, you know, you will never, hopefully you will never max out your potential.
Yeah, that's
because
so
if you've maxed out your potential, I mean, you've stopped trying and you've stopped growing. Now what people see when they hear a journey, let's say that, you know, even your own experiences, even the things that you like, you are better today than you were probably 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if I were to profile you, I'm going to have you on my podcast, and I'm going to talk about all the highlights, and I'm going to hopefully dig into a few lowlights, you know, where you learned some hard lessons.
Yeah.
But we're just going to kind of skim the surface, right?
Right.
And so you're looking at my story and you're going like, wow, this is amazing. You might not be saying that, but hopefully you are. Wow, this is amazing.
I am actually saying it, yes.
But, believe it or not. But you don't, you know, what you can never grab anyone, you can't get into someone's head, and you can't see like, hey, you know, when the recession hit, I started my company in 2006. The recession hit in 2009.
Yeah.
I almost lost everything.
Wow.
Right? Like we had a 4-month period where we didn't have any revenue at all. And I burned through all my cash and I had to let my team go. And I called my mom at like 10 in the morning on like a mid-February day. And I said, I don't understand why I'm doing this. Like, why did I give 3 years of my life to earn less money, to not build a portfolio, to feel like I'm failing for 3 years straight? Mm. Now, I didn't give up. So I learned stuff, but you know, people don't see that. People don't see that in the first year, you know, when I quit my job, I was earning $45,000 a year. My wife was young. She didn't have any income. We had my first daughter was only 3 months old. So I quit my $45,000 a year job. My wife has no money. We have a baby. And that first year we earned so little money. We earned $18,000 personally. We earned so little money that the government put us on welfare.
Yeah. Wow.
And baby bonus. Like, that was hard. You know, when we bought our first house, I talked about the recession. We bought our first house 3 months before the recession hit. And so, you know, like now we have this mortgage. So you don't see all of the valleys along the way, and everyone has them. We all have them in our stories. And so first of all, to answer your question, if you're looking at what other people are doing, they're only showing you the highlight reel. Right, you're judging your inside feelings and your personal feelings against someone else's highlight reel. You have no idea where 3 years, 5 years, 6 years, 10 years will take you. Really, we don't.
Yeah.
And what I've learned in the last few years actually is, when you start to get some success, you move from being ambitious and bold to earn that success to a place of being protective so you don't lose it. Mm. And when you're playing a game where you're trying not to lose the things that you've earned, you're actually not going to progress and hit that next level of potential and other things. And so I've spent the last few years actually like right now, I'm probably the least successful I've been in 10 years. Mm. And so for you to tell me like, oh wow, like all this great success, I feel like you're seeing a highlight reel. I feel like you're seeing maybe where I was 4 or 5 years ago. And right now, where we are in our world, in our economy with our team, it's not as good as it was 3 years ago,
Right.
But it doesn't mean that in 2 or 3 years, it won't be way better.
Yeah, so absolutely.
How do you personally define success?
Yeah.
I mean, I know the proper definition. Like, I'm supposed to say, you know,
the proper definition. I want to hear your gut wrenching, heart honest answer, man.
I don't feel successful most of the time is the truth.
Yeah.
Right. I don't feel successful. I don't know if I can do it. I have such high hopes and such lofty goals that I doubt if I can pull them off or I can do them or I have what it takes. And so, for me, I'm still very materialistic. I know that money won't make you happier, but I know that money makes things easier. I know that, that buying that thing that I'm obsessed with that I think is the answer will give me joy for a short amount of time. And yet I still want those things, right? So for me, success would be making the decision to do something for my family or for myself and being able to do it without restriction.
Wow.
So, you know, my kids are in French school. We're in Canada. My kids are in French school. I don't speak French, but my wife does. Maybe a year or two ago, I said, like, you know, it'd be really cool if we could go to Paris for the summer and just immerse the kids in French. And if it was make or break, we could do that. I could step back from the company for 2 months. We could have rented at the time an Airbnb. We could have afforded to do that. But it didn't seem important enough to warrant everything. Like, I still had to think it. I still had to question it. I wanted, to me, success would be being able to do what I want to do for others or for myself without having to second guess whether it will cost my future too much.
Yeah. Wow.
What that's so good. What a beautiful answer.
Yeah.
I appreciate your honesty, man.
Yeah. I love it too. you know, there's a quote that you made. I don't know when you made this quote, but it seems like a little standard that you kind of live by, which is, or a philosophy that you believe, which is we all have something to prove. I mean, first of all, do you still stand by that belief? But in addition to that, like, can you dive into what you mean by that?
I still stand behind it. I don't know if it's healthy. And so, I don't think you can really push yourself as far as you need to push yourself if you don't have a bit of a chip on your shoulder.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, even the people, you know, I've heard stories of very, very successful people who are facing massive, massive, massive challenges. And even within themselves, they have to prove it to themselves that they can hit that next level. Or they have to prove it to themselves so they can come back. So imagine yourself being, you know, gosh, I can't remember who it was. Actress, famous actress, older woman, has won Academy Awards, but went into television for 5 or 6 years and was coming back to her first movie and Clint Eastwood was directing it. And she didn't think she could act anymore at that level. And yet 20, 30 years of acting, Academy Award winner.
Yeah.
But within herself, she doubted whether she could become the character and draw what she needs to draw and step up and perform on the day she needed to, when she needed to. People have built multi-million dollar businesses and have sold them and then questioned, did I get lucky? Was it at the right time, at the right place? And did I just get lucky or can I do it again? And some people buckle under the pressure of that. Some people have bad parents or bad family members or the high school teacher who said, you know, you're an idiot. You will never amount to anything.
Yeah.
Some people have ex partners or spouses or girlfriends that they have to come back from. So we all have this. Now, whether we tap into it, whether we use it, whether we play on the healthy side of it or the dark and unhealthy side of it, we all have it. I don't know if it's good or not, but I know it's there. We all have something to prove.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
Let's make sure that we're aware of what that is. Let's tap into it when we need to draw on that well of energy or that, like, screw you. You don't think I can do this? Just watch. Just watch me do this. And then don't let it consume us. Let's not try to buckle under the pressure or any of those other dark things that can happen when you go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Personally, how have you found that balance, like, in your own life?
I struggle with it a lot because I do buckle under the pressure of it. I do find myself moving slower. I do find myself, you know, Like, here's a great example. A few years ago, I went to Tony Robbins, and during Unleash the Power Within, he takes you through this event or through this exercise where you're basically setting, let's say massive life goals. And so I'm thinking, okay, when I retire, what do I want? Right? I'm 37 now. I was maybe 35 at the time. What do I want when I retire? 30, 40 years from now, what do I want? And I wrote it down, and it seemed so small. It was like, I don't know what I wrote down, $5 million, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I was like, cool, $5 million, like cash, not assets, cash, yeah. $5 million in the bank, right? Okay, I'd have to work pretty hard. I'd have to be pretty lucky. I'd have to save. I'd have to, like, things would have to go right to earn $5 million cash. But then 40 years from now, like, that seems awfully small. It doesn't seem audacious or crazy. So I start to like up the number and up the number. And then I start to cut the years back until finally leaving the event. I'm like, okay, 10 years from now, now this is 2 years ago, 10 years from now, I'm gonna have $20 million cash, liquid assets, cash sitting in my bank account. And I'm like, great, that's my target. Now, yeah. I was too afraid to tell anyone that. You know, I told a few people, but I didn't really talk about it on social media. I wouldn't have talked about it here because it's audacious. I mean, like I know people with a lot of money, but a 10-year window is a short amount of time. Earning that much money to have a cash after taxes sitting in your bank account, like, you start to add some of the things up and you go like, and you start to work back, how am I going to achieve this from where I'm today, where I want to be? And I would tell people, it's not about the money. It's about who I need to be in 10 years from now to be able to have earned that kind of money.
Yeah.
So people would understand that, but I was still afraid to tell it because honestly, most people would go like, you know, they give you that look. They would go like,
very
they would
familiar
scoff.
With that. Yeah.
They would
I definitely
go like,
have experienced that look.
But they would also go like, who is this? Like, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, I can't do this. Yeah. No one can do what? And then on top of that, I would be in business groups. And I told someone who's a very successful entrepreneur who is in accounting and stuff. And he literally was like, you are crazy. I'm like, pardon me? He's like, you're crazy. He's like, do you know how hard it is to be able to, you're never going to save your way to that much money.
Yeah.
So what kind of asset are you going to build? And what plan do you have to build this asset that you're going to sell and walk away after blah, 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 or earning potential for yada, yada, yada. And so it's like, maybe I am crazy. Maybe it is an audacious goal. Maybe like, you know. And so I tell that story because it's like, I don't know. I you know, I'm 2 years into the 10 years. I don't feel like I'm actually any closer ahead financially. I mean, I know I'm not because we're in a recession right now, but maybe I'm putting the pieces in place. Maybe I'm stronger, but not having the goal is not also the answer, right? Like not having the target, not having the goal, not being bold, not being audacious isn't the answer. So I don't know if I'm living it right now properly, but I can tell you that I have a goal and I have many of these types of goals. I focus on certain things and I focus on a bunch of different things. And most times we don't share them because we are so afraid of that look. We're so afraid of the crazy. We're so afraid of the, who do you think you are to think that you can do this? And that's the other people projecting on you, their own fears, their own insecurities, and their own lack of belief in themselves. They would rather see you stay at their level than watch you go off and do the things that they don't have the courage to do.
Yeah. So true, man.
Come on, my man.
So good.
So everything about you screams that you follow this philosophy. I'm just going to take a risk and jump in. This philosophy that life begins at the edge of your comfort zone, right? So that you are always the idea that if you want to live a fulfilled life, you always have to be stretching yourself. Am I right or am I wrong in saying that?
So I don't know if I'm more honest than most or more vulnerable than most, but what I can tell you is that the reason I said, like, do you want the real answer that I should say or the answer that I feel is because I would agree with that statement. Mm. I maybe live 5% of my life there. Mm. And that bothers me. That bothers me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like right now, when we're recording this, I've had a great day. I've had great meetings. We've closed a few deals, you know, over the last few days. It's just like, I am on fire. So I could answer that question for you and say, I totally agree with you that life, that true life is lived at the edge of your comfort zone and you're always pushing that forward and you're always hitting the next level on that. But But, you know, tomorrow morning I may wake up and I mean, totally not believe that any of that is achievable or true. Mm-hmm. And that's my own makeup. And I'm learning more about this, like, you know, one side of Mark and the other side of Mark, but we all have it. We all have the, you know, you come up with an idea and you're like, yes. And you're talking to people and you're like, it is clicking and it's magic and it's great. Or you're doing that workout and everything comes together, right? You know, like you don't have indigestion. Your legs feel great. You slept really good the night before. Yeah. Your breathing is on fire and you're in the rhythm and you're just like, come on. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then the next day you show up having done everything the same. And you're like, why do I not have the power? Why do I not have the energy? What am I missing? Yeah. Like, and so I would agree with that statement, but I can't live that way all the time as much as I want to. And I don't know if anyone does. I don't know if they're honest enough to tell you that they don't.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was going to say is I really don't think anyone lives that to the full extent. And if you did, I don't think anyone could psychologically take it. Like constantly living out of your comfort zone. You need that moment of reprieve. But with that being said, so if you do agree with, or have a general premise agreement, when was the last time you kind of stepped out of your comfort zone and what did that look like for you?
I mean, I just started therapy last week.
It is freaking helpful. Oh my God. It is amazing.
I've never done it. I'm a pretty distrustful person. I don't necessarily, and it's not that I don't, I actually trust, if someone can earn my respect, then I very much trust them. Like you've earned my respect, I will come completely under and respect who you are. But in most cases, in my experience, that professionals, so doctors, accountants, like let's just say like professionals, know their stuff, but have to move so quickly through it that they I don't think that they truly understand the nuances of what's needed. And so, you know, think about the last time you went for a physical or a checkup, right? Doctor breezes in, yeah, you're looking great. You know, maybe it's half an hour, maybe it's, what are they going to tell you, right? Like, what do they really know? So I don't trust the system because I don't think people spend enough time to be able to give me what I need for me. They're just brush strokes. So I've been really putting off the need for therapy or anything for a very long time, but I have anxiety that has been getting worse over the years. I've always had it, but it's getting worse. I have panic attacks. I'm not the most patient person. I find myself reacting to my kids in ways that I don't want. I don't want to be that type of dad. I don't want to be that type of business owner. I don't want to be this type of husband. And I've run out of ways to ignore it. Mm-hmm. And so honestly, it was well outside of my, like very much outside of my comfort zone to want to sit down with a therapist and make everything formal and start that process. And you know, the first session, which was just last week, I literally like I showered and I got all ready and I'm like, here, you know, is it this way? And when I like left, I was like, I had just finished a workout. Like everything was dripping with sweat. It was so uncomfortable for me.
So funny how that happens.
You know, I really feel like someone needed to hear that though. I really appreciate you sharing that. That's huge. That's massive. Cause I know, you know, just my wife and I actually just recently started marriage counseling. And it's not because we're under this pressure of like, we're feeling like we got to get divorced or something like that. It's because we just don't want to get to that point ever, you know? And so I really appreciate you sharing that. Cause that kind of, you know, that was, it's a weird feeling wanting to hop into something like that. You know, and now kind of hopping back into some questions about business and stuff. And, you know, people start their businesses and they get really excited about it. And they have a reason why they're hopping into it. But, you know, all of us, when we first start a business, I think we can agree are all ignorant to some degree as far as like what trials and errors we're going to face. And I guess, what do you think are some of the misconceptions that people overlook starting their business when they first get started?
Oh, wow. So I think, gosh, that's such a big question and it's so important. So I don't think that business owners are risk takers by nature. I think they they can increase their risk tolerance later.
Really?
Everyone will tell you, you know, you're starting a business. It's so risky. It's risky. It's risky. I don't think anyone starts a business with risk in their mind. I think we're foolishly optimistic. I think we can do it better.
Yeah.
We can do it better. We can make it work. I can outwork people. I can out-hour them. I'm stronger. I'm better. If they can do it, I can do it. Blah, 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 blah. And all of that stuff is true. But what you start to bump into is, so that's the excitement. That's what starts you. That's what launches you. No matter what you start, whether it's like, hey, I'm going to start an Instagram account, or I'm going to start a business, or I'm going to do something much bigger. The excitement carries you. I mean, it carries you through all these little things, but you're going to hit a point where you hit what I call the valley. And the valley is when, like, hey, you know, you started the business and things, you know, think about a restaurant, right? New restaurant opens up in your town and the lineup is out the door and you're just like, I am amazing. You know, like, I'm going to open three locations. I'm going to go to the next town. I'm going to do all this stuff. Yeah, and then like 2 or 3 months go by and the restaurant's empty. Mm. And it's just like, it's not because it's bad customer service. Not the menu's bad. It's not that the food's bad. It's not anything. It's just that you're not new anymore. Mm. Right? You're not new. Yeah. People have checked you out. They've tried you. So when I started my company, I went to everyone I knew and I was just like, I just reached out to all my network. And so for the first 2 years of revenue, it was basically everyone I knew gave me business. And then I ran out of people I knew and my business started to go down. Like, I didn't have other lead sources. You know, when I launched my Instagram stuff to do this type of thing, everyone in my life was like, you're so brave. And that's so great. And that's so awesome. And I'm like, comment after comment after comment. But like 6 weeks in, you know, like, my mom's not watching every single thing anymore. You know, my friend from high school is no longer commenting every time because they're done with it. Like, they gave me the encouragement, and then they're not going to give me the encouragement anymore because now I'm doing what they're used to me doing. Mm. And so we need to recognize that the excitement will start us. The excitement will carry us, but the valley will come. For anything we do, we will hit the realization of, did I bite off more than I can chew? Do I really know what I'm doing? You know, all that imposter syndrome stuff. And so all I can say is, when you hit that valley, the only thing you can do is push through.
Yeah.
So the best thing you can do is change something, find something to get excited about, like tweak something, just make it new again. So that way you get that lift. But you have to push through that valley because if you don't, then you're basically either stuck and then you're going to give up, or you are giving up.
And so, I mean, like, and not to interrupt you, but like, as a sideline question with that, like, do you think that when do you know when it's the right time to move on to something else? Because you just can't pass by or through that barrier that you're talking about there. And that's so hard, I think, to, for everybody.
So for me, I have moved very slowly with investments. So as I was scaling my team, I would want to see, you know, 6 to 9 months of craziness before I could trust that it wasn't just seasonality.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, I'm not going to hire, you know, like for my business, I'm not going to hire another video editor until my current video team is at like beyond capacity for like 6 months straight.
Yeah.
Because I could hit a little window where it's like, oh, things are amazing. And then invest. And then suddenly you're like, oh, where did everyone go? And now you have crazy overhead and you have to cut people. I've done both. I've made both mistakes, but typically I would wait. But the same thing's true on the other side.
Yeah.
I don't want to give up on something until enough time has passed that I realize, like, no, this really isn't working.
Yeah.
And so I would need to see like 6 months of no momentum and no hope with still trying for me to be able to say this is dead. Because if, you know, if you have a bad month or you have a bad quarter and then you are able to put together 4 or 5 solid days that start to feel like old times.
Yeah.
And then maybe you might have another bad week or two. Yeah. Well, I would then say, well, those 4 or 5 days of putting things together proves to me that there's still hope that we can still keep doing this. Right.
Right.
So I would need to see things be bad for quite some time.
For months. Was bouncing. Yeah.
And then the other thing you can do, not to be too crazy about this, but the other thing you can do is just pivot, right? Like you don't have to give up. You can just change, and you should change. Fanta, my company, Fanta Media, started as a video production company that became a video creative marketing agency that has now become, honestly, more of a lead generation company.
Yeah.
And so the company we are today, our current team, our current focus, our current clients, has nothing to do with where we were 8 years ago.
But you were able to make those pivots to
get
to where
you are. I followed what interested me.
Yeah.
And that's it. I just, every few years I'm changing because I'm getting bored You know, I'm getting bored of making, you know, talking head videos with a CEO talking about a quarterly update. You know, that's so 2009 to me. If you do that today, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm just bored by that. But equally, you know, there was a time for 2 or 3 years where we did like national television campaigns with like the year the Raptors won, you know, the championship.
Which I love the Raptors, by the way.
I'm just awesome. Saying. We did a campaign with NBA Canada, with the Raptors, with our main client Sun Life. You know, we had two of our Raptors on set and we're spending the day with them. And it's like, I was getting bored with that stuff too, though. So, so, you know, like you can pivot, you can change. Like I said, you have no idea where you're going to be in 5 or 10 years. You really don't.
No, it's
to go right with all of this, talking about how to survive, talking about when to quit and when not to, and pivoting and making yourself new again. You had mentioned at one point that there are 3 skills you need to survive in sales: being thoughtful, questions, listening, and then the follow-up. Can you elaborate on what that looks like and how you kind of came to that realization?
So someone pointed out to me, well, Joshua on my team, he's on my team now. He was a fan who, you know, followed me for a bunch of years. And, you know, he pointed out to me that I tend to communicate through questions. And so like, if we weren't doing this interview, but we were just talking and you asked me a question, I would typically follow up with a question. Right.
Yeah.
And before we even started this, I said, hey, real quick, who's our audience? Who are we talking to? Like, I want to know the context.
Right.
And so I think I picked this up from, I'm not Jewish, but I think I picked this up from the way that rabbis tend to teach youth in the Jewish community, which is asking a really thought-provoking question is the best way to allow the person you're speaking to arrive at their own conclusion or their own answer. And you can guide them there through questions. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, yesterday I had one of my old clients that we hadn't worked with for about a year or two call me up out of the blue for this really small project that suddenly turned into a really massive project. But I haven't talked to them in 2 years. So like, I literally don't really know much of what's happening to them. Yeah. So we spend 45 minutes where I basically just ask them questions. And this took me a long time to realize, because when I started my company, I thought that asking questions showed that you didn't know what you were talking about. And I thought, if I'm the expert, shouldn't they be asking the questions and shouldn't I be answering them? And it was like, I don't know how many years it took me, maybe 5 years, maybe 8 years. It took me a really long time to realize that like, oh, I'm going to give them an answer and I'm going to give them a really good answer, a better answer than that doctor who spends 30 minutes breezing in and breezing out.
But for me
to give them a really good answer, I need to really understand them. I really need to understand what they value, what they need, what they want, what they expect. And the only way I can do that is by asking questions. And if they're getting to a conclusion that I don't think they should get to, rather than me tell them that, why don't I just ask them a question so they could arrive at that themselves?
Yeah.
And so I just think that there's nothing more powerful than being able to ask the right question or even ask a thought-provoking question and then hear what they're saying and read between the lines and direct the conversation to where you need to go, which is the listening. And then the follow-up thing is just that people are super lazy. I mean, like you need to own, you need to carry your client's bags for them, right? Like you need to do their work for them, chase them for them, worry for them. You need to do all that stuff for them. But I love powerful questions.
Yeah, that's so good. And that's so true. I forget who said it, but someone said something about how you have more control of the conversation if you're the one who's asking the questions, right? I don't remember who said that, but it's so true. It makes so much sense. So obviously you are so incredibly advanced with, you know, your personal development. At least I think so. And I'm just curious, you know, maybe what are some books that you like to read or maybe some different kinds of sources of personal development that you could share with us that we could also dive into ourselves?
Oh, great question. Well, I mean, listen, first, I appreciate that. Thank you. You know, I don't know. You guys look younger than me. So what I would say is
we could be the younger brothers for sure.
I mean, if you met me when I was 25, right? I started my company when I was 23, I think. If you met me when I was 25, very different person. And hopefully I'm going to be better when I'm 45, you know, in the future. In terms of the most impactful books for me, recently at least.
Yeah.
Mindset by Carol Dweck.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Is really something where even when you ask me about the something to prove, I realize that my leaning on something to prove is really just a fixed mindset point of view.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
if
yeah.
I'm going to be able to move to a growth mindset and live there more of the time, and if I want to get other people there, I need to help people get from something to prove, fixed mindset, right?
Yeah.
To the other side of that, where it's not something to prove. Like, I have nothing to prove. I'm going to do the best that I can, and I'm always going to get better. I have nothing to prove. So Carol Dweck, Ray Dalio Principles is fantastic. On the marketing side of things, Russell Brunson's Expert Secrets. Now, he has a lot of different books and he'll try to sell you a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Expert Secrets is the only one that I tend to recommend.
Okay, cool.
Donald Miller's brand, what is it? Building a Story Brand. Evan Carmichael, you know, you may know that we're friends. And so, it's not just because we're friends. I think he does really good work as well. So Built to Serve is his latest book and it's amazing. I can go through tons and tons and tons of those types of things. Marie Folio's Everything's Figureoutable, great book as well.
Phenomenal. And I was curious too, when is the Mark Drager book coming out? Because I would read it.
I love the thought of it. The problem I have right now, maybe it's not a problem. The thing that I'm working through right now is I don't think I've come up with any answers that I can own. So I love a lot of what other people are doing. And so I could go around and just like cherry pick the things and then just like be like, here's the book.
Yeah.
But we, this year, we right now, you know, are standing on the shoulders of many years of a series of decades of people putting together really good stuff.
Yeah.
And so, I know that when I work one-on-one with someone that I could like tailor what we're doing to make sure that I drive value. I don't know if I've developed a universal enough answer or framework to, I don't even know what the problem is. So it's almost one of those, like, I really want to actually write a book and I really want to be the guy who wrote a book. I don't know if I have an answer that someone else hasn't done a better job already of answering.
Yeah. Well, man, I don't know, dude. I want to encourage all of our followers again to go and follow you on all of your different social medias and Instagram and YouTube and whatnot, because the material you bring out, man, I mean, I agree to some degree, like we kind of all regurgitate things that people have said from the past and maybe we paint a different picture with it, but I just love the way that you paint pictures, the way that you explain things to people. So I hope you do one of these days write a book. But
I don't want to discourage. So I do appreciate that. I don't want to discourage anyone. So one thing I do say is most people do not start things for the very reason I just gave them.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, like I'm not going to start Instagram. I'm not going to be a thought leader. I'm not going to start marketing. I'm not going to start the company because everybody's already doing such a great job. Right. Now, the best part of brand building, which is something I do a lot of, is no one can say what you need to say the way you need to say it for the reasons you're saying it.
Right, right.
So there's no one else, you know, like every snowflake is unique.
Yeah.
Every person's DNA, I don't know if it's true or not, but I imagine unless you're twins, everybody's DNA is unique.
Yeah.
But no one has your upbringing. No one has your background. No one has your cultural outlook. No one has your voice. No one. And so I say that and I do this knowing that I am unique to a certain group of people.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't stop me from writing a book. I just don't know what I would write it about yet.
Fair enough. And I think, unfortunately, we have lost Gabe on the audio end of things. I do not know why. It's so bizarre. But we only had a couple of more questions for you, unfortunately. I wish we had more. But I just wanted to, if you have a little bit more time for those
of
questions.
Course.
Okay, awesome. So, sorry, Gabe, I'm taking your question, bro. But
oh, he's now waving. He's giving a sign. He's saying, stop it, guys.
He's saying he's going to kill time.
Pushing me out. Oh, he's throwing his chair across the room.
He's saying he's going to kill Spectrum for not having good internet service. So
welcome to Maine.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So listen, this is not meant to sound morbid by any means at all, but let's say that you're in your last moments. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you got all of, you know, your family members, people that you love that are around you. What's the final piece of advice that you'd give those people around you? Please take
that's such an interesting question. Cause I totally think of the, like, okay, you're on your deathbed looking back. What do you value? What are your regrets? Mm. I've never thought of What piece of advice would I give? I don't know.
Don't feel rushed to answer the question. We ask people this question, and I love it because everyone has a different answer. It's not even related to whatever they do. It's interesting.
I think that I would probably say that nothing really matters. And I don't want to say that nothing at all really matters, but the things that we think matter don't really matter that much.
Interesting.
And, you know, the obvious answer is, you know, love, connection, relationships, health, family, being able to be cognitively aware right till your last days, like all of that stuff matters. Quality of life matters. But all the things we think, all the things I worry about, all the things we think of, none of that really matters. Now,
yeah,
I've been there for a very long time. And part of my makeup and my problem is then if nothing matters, then why try? Why try? And so again, anyone who has maybe trouble starting things or questions or doubts, you know, my whole thing is like, let's fight some doubts. You need to be able to push through that and get to the other side of that. But the truth is that most of the things that you're worried about right now, not only on your deathbed will you not think about it or consider it, but chances are 10 years from now, if I were to sit you down and say, hey, back, remember in 2020, remember that thing happened? You'd be like, what? I don't even remember that. And right. So I use that, I flash forward to go like, oh, this thing that I think is a really big deal. Because I faced a lot of really big deals over the last 14 years of running my company.
Yeah.
Honestly, I probably can't remember even half of those really big deals.
Wow.
Like,
yeah.
Or, and those are the really big deals. Like I've had, I remember this day, I had a day where I lost 3 projects and $500,000 in one day. You know, got put on hold, this and that. Like I remember that day. But
yeah.
I don't remember what I did the day before or the day after. I don't really remember even how I felt in the moment other than I remember that day in May. The things that you're worried about, you're not going to remember. They're really not that big of a deal and they don't really matter.
Yeah. Dude, sounds like you're the one who should be the therapist right now, bro. Super, super, super good. Well, dude, we have one last question for you, and that's, can you just kind of share with us what's next for you? What does the next year look like for you or going into 2021?
Yeah. So I've spent the last 4-5 years pivoting my agency, which takes longer than I thought I would, moving from being in a pretty established business, you know, multi-million dollar business with a team, established processes and clients to like, hey, now we're kind of a startup again, and questioning and deconstructing so much about myself, my personality, my team, my company that, you know, if we were speaking 6 months ago, I would have been way more lost. Like honestly, I've spent a year feeling like I've been tearing everything down.
Yeah.
And every time I thought I got to the bottom of the valley or the bottom of tearing it down, it was like, oh no, there's another level. There's another level of deconstruction to the point where it's just like you're questioning if what you're doing even matters.
Yeah.
Like, now, what I'm excited about is for the last month and a half, after all of that work, after all of that deconstruction, it's like, it's exciting because it feels like it used to feel. Things are clicking. Things are working. Things are coming together. We're hearing all of like 5 years of change and a few years of like slowly now things are coming together. It's all making sense. You know, clients are coming and the team is getting rebuilt. And so 2021 for us is like, I'm at this really great place now, actually, where it's like, we can just stay where we are and ride out where we are and then rebuild, or we can build our way through 21.
Yeah.
And when I started my company, I never thought of contraction or shrinking.
Yeah.
And having survived the last recession, I've spent the last 5 years terrified of shrinking. And yet, you know, a year ago, we were at 24 staff. Right now we're at 5. Like that's some major shrinking.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. We were a multi-million dollar company. This year, I think we're hoping to have like $600,000 revenue.
Yeah, that's
a lot of shrinking, right?
Yeah. Totally.
And so, but what I've figured out is like, not only can you survive it,
you can
create something brand new out of what you kind of brought down, better, stronger. And so 21 for me is like, I have so much confidence in what we're doing now that I can't help, but like, it's either going to happen at the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, or the end of the year, but we already know what the next steps are. We're just now waiting to make those investments, to make those changes.
Wow. Whew. Dude, that's amazing. Gabe is out there cheering super loud.
Yeah, he's come back in.
I can't hear him at all.
Although
he's just like,
he ripped his shirt off in anger, which is weird.
Gabe, put your clothes back on. Jeez, I'm crow. Dude, well, we seriously appreciate all of your time. And guys, I want to remind again, everybody, please follow Mark on his social media, his Instagram and his YouTube channel. The guy's just absolutely phenomenal. And I have to say, dude, you probably have been one of the most transparent, honest dudes I've ever talked to on our podcast. And we greatly appreciate that, because I think we need a lot more of that in this world. And thank you so much for your time, dude. This has been wonderful.
Well, Cody, thank you so much. And Gabriel as well. I haven't heard too much from you throughout this, but thank you very much as well.